Welcome to The Sound of Economics. My name is Guntram Wolf, and in today's Director's Cut, brought to you by Bruegel, I'm talking with Francesco Papadia, Senior Fellow at Bruegel, about Italy and the Italian coalition agreement and the market nervousness that we've been seeing in the last few days. Welcome, Francesco.
Hello. Thank you for being here.
Well, Francesco, the starting point, I think, should be a quick analysis, a quick discussion of the coalition agreement that the two parties in Italy, the League and Cinque Stelle, the Five Star Movement, have agreed on. They have agreed, just to mention a few headlines, on a universal basic income of 780 euros per person per month. They funded in part through the EU. They have agreed not to mention a referendum on membership of the Euro or the EU, but that referendum has been on the table before and has been leaked to the press before. They have agreed on a flat tax with a dual rate that would be actually quite low. So I guess my first question to you is, do these numbers actually on the fiscal side, do you think they will add up so that Italy can continue to fulfill the Maastricht treaty criteria, especially on the deficit? Or do you see a significant expansion in the fiscal deficit of Italy?
Well, the short answer is that they are not compatible with Maastricht. And they're not compatible with Maastricht, even excluding pension reform that they want to kill out, the famous Fornero reform. And of course, I mean, the calibration of this measure is still ongoing. We don't know exactly. But even if you have a kind of an upper and a lower, the lower would still not be compatible with Maastricht, and probably not only incompatible with the debt constraint, which is stricter, but not even with the deficit constraint, the famous 3%, which to many politicians is the only constraint that Italy has taken. Well, of course, Italy has also accepted a debt constraint, which is more challenging.
So we are likely to end up in a situation, we don't know yet all the details, but we are likely to end up in a situation where the Italian fiscal deficit will go up well beyond the 3% criterion, will not fulfill the debt break that the fiscal compact that, of course, had the aim to reduce the debt to GDP ratio, so clear violation of a number of commitments that that Italy has signed up to relative to the European Union and relative to its euro area membership. So how is all of this going to be funded? I mean, will markets just be ready to fund these kind of deficits, or do you think what we've seen in the last few days, the increase in sovereign spreads, it's just the beginning of a much more significant funding squeeze in the sovereign bond markets?
Well, I think that if they do what they said they want to do, the reaction of the market would be much more than what we have seen so far. So far, it has been clear, but not extreme. And that is because maybe the market still has a hope that at the end, for one reason or the other, they would not do at least the most extreme versions of what they said they would do. Let me add to what you said about constraints at the European level, that there are also constitutional constraints in Italy, right, about what you can do with a fiscal. Basically, there is a balanced budget constraint in Italy, in the Constitution, and the president can say to a law, no, I cannot sign this law because this does not have proper cover, and send it back to Parliament. Then Parliament can approve it again. But still, I mean, the president sending this back to Parliament would be quite a significant move.
Well, let's walk a little bit more through these constitutional limits. I mean, of course, there's the balanced budget rule, and the president has some scope to stop it. But there is still a majority of the Italians that have voted for those two parties, and they hold the majority, or even though a thin majority in the Senate, but they do hold a majority, and at the end can push things through. I would also want to mention that a lot of additional spending can be done in basically off budget items, be it through state companies or other means. So how easy will it really be to circumvent these constitutional limits if you're really determined? Or how difficult will it be? I mean, the markets, and you also seem to put some hope into that. But at the end of the day, if you have a strong political will and you have a majority in the parliament and you run the institutions, I mean, don't you find ways of circumventing and overcoming these limits?
Yes, at the end, Italy is a parliamentary democracy, so parliament will have its way. However, once the market starts seeing that their hope that things would not get so extreme is no longer valid, then they would send a message. And of course, I mean, there are two important constituencies in Italy that are interested in the cost of debt. One is taxpayers, and the other is holders of government securities. And these are voters. So you could think that the parties would start caring about the opinion of these taxpayers and holders of government debt that would suffer the consequences of an increase of the cost of debt.
Well, I think that brings us to the important question of what happens with sovereign debt and what happens on the European side, and how will the Europeans react if those constitutional limits were to be overcome. And I think the first point I would like to make is that currently a large part of Italian debt is held domestically. According to our Bruegel sovereign bond holding database, 36% of Italian debt is held abroad, while the rest is held domestically. So the first people that would suffer from a decrease in bond prices would be, of course, mostly domestic. But 36% of Italian debt is still a lot of debt. We are talking here of 685 billion euros of debt that is held outside of Italy in various Eurozone investment vehicles, pension funds, other banks, and so on and so forth. So let's perhaps first think a little bit about the political economy in Italy itself. 17% of the debt is held in Italian banks. Those banks are already fragile overall. We have still a lot of non-performing loans in Italian banks. They have benefited from the QE program in the sense that bond prices went up thanks, and bond yields went down thanks to QE, which was a boost to the quality of the balance sheet. Now the bond prices are falling and yields going up could become a problem for some of Italian banks that have a pretty high holdings of Italian debt. What do you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That would add to the fragility. I mean, in 2012, heads of state and government launched the banking union to break the doom loop between banks and sovereign. But the doom loop, notwithstanding banking union, is still there and is pretty strong in Italy.
It
So
got worse in Italy, in fact, in the last few years. I
it
mean, most other countries, in Spain, the banks got rid of their sovereign bond holdings. In Italy, they did not.
yeah, so the doom loop is still there, so the banking system would be made more fragile. But there is also in Italy quite some percent of public debt that is held by families directly. just because there is so much debt, but also, I don't know, because it's some kind of tradition. So there would be an immediate effect when people would start seeing the accounts are coming from the banks on the value of their financial wealth, of their savings. They would see some consequences. Not to mention that at the end, I mean, banks and the Banca d'Italia are owned by the public. So at the end, sure, it will get there. But also immediately, they would start seeing something happening to their savings.
But do you think, in terms of the political economy, this will impress this new government, or is this new government elected by exactly those people that don't have a lot of BTPs on their balance sheet?
Now that's a good point. That's a good point. And of course, I mean, there are two components in this new government, if this new government comes, because I mean, right, we have been said that it is coming now every time, and we haven't seen it as yet. But let's assume that it comes. The two components, and I would say that the two components are pretty different. One you would characterize as inexperienced. So the Cinque Stelle is basically a movement that has no experience. I mean, they've been managing a few towns, and that's all. The other component is extreme. And when you put these two components together, inexperience and extreme kind of policies, you don't know exactly what could come out. This is totally new in a way. So it could be that this warning system is not heeded, or is not heeded until very late in the process. I would imagine that at a certain point in time, it would be felt and acted upon. But the question is, when this would come, at which level? I mean, in 2011, 2012, the spread went up to 550 basis point. So now we are at 200.
But in 2012, the Eurozone was on fire. I mean, so
exactly. And of course, at that time, one could say that the cause was small Greece. Now the cause would be big Italy. So that makes a difference.
Well, let's talk a bit more about sort of what are the options from a European policymaker's point of view. Let's say you sit in. Let's perhaps start talking about the ECB. One issue that immediately could become an issue is as yields increase and structural deficits increase, rating agencies get nervous and may downgrade Italian debt. At what stage, I mean, how quickly would that be an issue for the ECB in its normal collateral policy?
Well, Italy is not very far from the minimum level of a credit that can be accepted. And so if rating agencies really started to act upon policies, then the prospect of Italian debt becoming a problem from a collateral point of view would not be very far. And of course, we know that is really a lethal thing. I mean, we've seen it in Greece. So we just hope this does not happen, but we should not count that this will not happen.
Right. So if it happens, it basically means Italian banks that hold the 70% of Italian debt will find it probably quite difficult to post any sensible collateral to the ECB on which they could draw liquidity, which very quickly then leads to acute liquidity shortages in the Italian banking system that then would very quickly lead to a pretty dramatic situation. Probably already now the nervousness among some depositors is increasing, so the liquidity needs of the Italian banking system may very quickly increase as this crisis escalates. Now, I guess this is of course all very speculative, and I think, as you rightly point out, we don't know where and when and how this will end up. We don't even have a government yet, so it's really more a scenario analysis. But I think still it's worthwhile for me to mention the outrage that I can observe in public commentary in Germany and elsewhere, where people really have very little comprehension for what's ongoing, where I think the support for this new government has really eroded tremendously because of the leaked coalition agreement that in the end was not put in place and revoked. But still, I mean, people were very angry and sad about, in particular, those 2 points. The one was the demand to cancel 250 billion worth of Italian debt on the balance sheet of the euro system. The other one was the open threat to put up a referendum on the euro, which is actually quite a significant threat, also because the euro is not very popular in Italy. And of course, because if it was to be put in place, it would have dramatic consequences for not just Italy, but for the entire Eurozone. We are very closely intertwined. It's not just the sovereign bonds that are held abroad, 685 billion that I mentioned, but of course, it's all the private sector holdings. I mean, there's a lot of investment in Italy and a lot of Italian investment in Europe, and all of that would be affected if all of this got escalated. The recovery that we are currently seeing in Italy, and that's still quite slow, but you know, at least there is job creation and a recovery, would probably very quickly evaporate because sort of investment dries down. So I think we can very quickly see a scenario where you know, the things look quite dramatic in both sovereign bond markets, but more generally, and asking really quite fundamental questions. And so overall, I think it will be quite important to see, you know, what will actually be decided, what will be implemented, what will not be implemented, and to watch very carefully, because the nervousness certainly will increase. But perhaps you want to add?
No, I fully agree that it remains critical to look at the developments. And in a way, some of the scenarios can be so bad that you would think that responsible people would not do things that lead to those scenarios. So I said inexperience and extreme. If the inexperience component is stronger, that can be remedied by having government responsibilities after all. And so when you would see that the consequences of your action could be so destructive, reasonable people should move away from those steps, from those moves. So in a way, they are so extreme that they should become unlikely. Right. Then, of course, I think you would agree that making forecasts in economics is difficult. Making forecasts in politics is impossible. So
right.
You cannot really put up a confidence interval story about what would happen. But again, and of course, Italy has something of a history of regretfully going close to the brink and then coming back. So this is not the most nerve-soothing way of doing things, but it's better than just not coming back from the brink when you're close to it. So you still hope that there would be some reasoning and some experience mitigating the most dangerous kind of actions.
But perhaps to end on a positive question, I mean, there must be surely also some upsides into the political developments. And the reality is, of course, that the south of Italy has done really very poorly for many years, many decades, in fact. And that so far no panacea has been found, no political movement in Italy has really addressed and resolved this issue. Now we do have basically Cinque Stelle at the brink of at the almost taking power, and they have been elected in the south of Italy, and one of their big agenda items was to improve corruption, improve the functioning of the justice system, improve the overall situation in the south of Italy, mobilize people, bring them back into jobs. So is there, I mean, is there an upside that they could actually succeed and, you know, actually manage to reverse the story, and especially the story of the decline of the south of Italy, which of course is a real issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, of course, I mean, there are not only bad things in the program. I mean, there are also some positive developments. And Italy needs change. Italy needs change. I mean, you refer to the south, but on aggregate terms, Italy has not been growing for 20 years. And without
Indeed.
growth, there is no employment, there is no way to deal with the debt, there is no way to increase public service. I mean, growth is essential. And the big misunderstanding that I see many times in Italy is that growth, long-term sustainable growth, can only come from budget deficits. I mean, that is not the case. I mean, it's the supply side that must improve. So Italy needs change, needs very deep changes. The problem is that the changes that are so far in the program are not of the kind that would assure higher growth in Italy. I mean, you mentioned the South very correctly, but what seem to have won many votes is not what they want to do on corruption, but what they want to do on a further kind of fiscal support, this income, citizens' income, that seems to have won the support in the south. And so you have Lega that has won in the north because of the flat tax that now is a dual flat tax. The south, which has voted for Cinque Stelle because of the citizens' income, and that is a kind of unsound combination. But of course, I would not deny that the situation in Italy needed change, and you can always hope that this change will come. You just hope it will be of the right in the right direction.
Okay, thank you very much, Francesco, for joining us in today's Director's Cut for Bruegel.